Hello, this is Jonathan Marks via PCJ Online, just about to push the button on another programme from the Media Network Vintage Radio Archives.
If you've tuned into the station expecting to get... Well, if you're tuned in expecting to hear these sounds, you'll be sorely disappointed.
This is Radio Netherlands, the Dutch international... What? Oh, service.
Media Network, the weekly communications program for shortwave listeners. Produced and presented by Jonathan Marks.
Right, let's stop fooling around and get on with today's programme. First, a bit of good news for the several hundred computer enthusiasts who've shown interest in the HobbyScope Basic Code, which we talked about at the end of January. At present, I'm in the middle of the English translation for the handbook, and we're hoping to get it out very shortly. Everyone who's returned one of the little green forms enclosed with our computer information release will get full details the moment it's ready. Next, here's Pete Myers, who's ready with our first item of media news.
Well, Jonathan, the House of Representatives Foreign Affairs Committee voted 25 in favour and 5 against on Wednesday, March the 25th, to authorise $10 million for the start-up of the new US radio station broadcasting to Cuba, Radio Martí. One congressman warned, however, that the operation could result in severe political embarrassment for the administration of U.S. President Ronald Reagan. Representative Jim Leach, a Republican from the state of Iowa, said he supported the station, to be known as Radio Martí, but he said Cuba may decide to retaliate by putting into operation a massive 500-kilowatt transmitter broadcasting on the planned Radio Martí frequency of 1040 kilohertz. Leach noted that this frequency also is used by WHO, a clear channel station in Iowa where Reagan once worked as an announcer. Leach urged that Radio Martí instead broadcast on another frequency, sharing an AM transmitter in Marathon, Florida, currently utilized by the Voice of America. However, other committee members, as well as administration officials at the hearing, responded that such a transmitter-sharing plan probably would be unfeasible on technical grounds. They also stressed that Radio Martí was intended to operate separately from VOA. Representative Jonathan Bingham, a New York Democrat, spoke out in opposition to the new U.S. station, which is designed to beam news and entertainment to Cuba's population. He said, and I quote, "I think there is a very serious question as to whether this Radio Martí will accomplish anything. It will be jammed by the Cuban government." But Representative Edward J. Dervinsky, an Illinois Republican, responded that this is a perfect vehicle to counteract Cuban Premier Fidel Castro's activities. The House Foreign Affairs Committee also approved $17.7 million for next year's expenses on the station. In theory, this decision does require the approval of the full Congress. But this should not delay work on the station, since its approval, after getting the go-ahead from the Foreign Affairs Committee, is almost a foregone conclusion.
Je leest haast elke dag in iedere krant, met de Sibiërs iets vreselijks aan de hand. Nee, zo kan het echt niet verder gaan. De RTT komt met een grove borstelaan.
One of the many records released here in the Benelux at the time of the introduction of Citizens Band Radio. 2 years after its legalisation, a quarter of a million people are using 27 megahertz for personal short-distance communications here in Holland. Along with the equipment came the magazines to cater for the field. One of them, with the title Break Break, decided not only to concentrate on CB, but devote 20% of its pages to shortwave listening. That was in 79, but now the balance is changing, as Willem Bos, owner and publisher of the magazine, explained to Media Network.
Yeah, I think that CB radio is, at least in Holland, a kind of social talk device. After a few months, it's boring, because you have spoken with all the guys in your neighborhood, but you know a little bit then of electronics and propagation. You know that there are more stations than just CB radio, and they want to know something about it.
Any particular level are you interested in, for example, a beginner?
Yes. We keep staying on what you name a low level. It means that we are writing for people who don't know anything about electronics, and we're writing articles on such a way that it is easy readable. If they're getting more and more knowledge of a certain subject, for instance from computers or shortwave, then they have to go to other magazines which are on a higher level. But we want to just to popularize all the different fields of electronics.
Doesn't that mean, though, that because you perhaps don't grow up then, that you lose a lot of readers who say, well, I know everything there is to know in Break now, I'm going to go to something else?
No, that's not true. I think that they're starting to read Break, and after a while they're buying a second magazine, and they still keep reading Break, because it's not all low level. We have also some parts in it for people who are more have more knowledge from electronics, so they still read it. And we are still one of the fastest growing magazines in the Netherlands. In fact, one of the two magazines who are still growing at this moment. The others are losing readers.
Is there a trend away from the construction? For example, there used to be a number of magazines, especially in the United Kingdom, that would offer simple one-transistor TRF shortwave receivers, where nowadays there tends to be a feeling that why should you bother to build it when you can go out and buy something far cheaper?
That's true. Of course, you can buy nearly everything cheaper than you can build it by yourself, but that's a kind of hobby you have to make it. But I think that there is no trend of going away from these simple home projects. But here in Holland, every year, 400,000 young guys becoming 16 or 17 years. And a lot of them are interested in electronics, but are not ready to build, for instance, an electronic dice with 10 integrated circuits or whatever. They just want to have this adventure of building a simple crystal receiver and hearing our Dutch local transmitters. And then they become a little bit more interested, and we're publishing also simple articles and simple home construction projects with one of two transistors. Turn your radio up and let the music
play. Break is one of two Dutch language magazines catering for the shortwave listener. But whereas its rival devotes only one page to shortwave news, Break has expanded its coverage to include consumer reviews of electronic equipment.
Exactly. The number of readers is, of course, not known, because a lot of people buying one magazine and read it with two or three. We're expecting to have about 128,000 readers, and we are selling about 70,000 magazines every month.
Any particular reason why people should be interested in going to shortwave, for example?
Well, I think that this shortwave listening is a kind of adventure. And we get a tremendous lot of letters returned. They say, we don't know, that's fantastic. Can you write a little bit more about it? And so on, we grow up. And I think that it is the adventure of listening to other worlds, other people. Also, there's a little political interest. But also, for instance, for the folk music of Africa and the Middle East. There's a lot of interest in that kind of things.
Okay, what about the dealers, though? Are they aware of the shortwave listener?
No, unfortunately not. The backup for the products, you know, that most companies, they're not bringing out only shortwave receivers, but also, for instance, ham radio transceivers or hi-fi equipment, like for instance, Grundig. And this shortwave piece of their market has not many interest of the representatives here. So the service and the backup and information, it's very bad here. And we have a small task to make it a little bit better. But we see, for instance, in not especially shortwave, but in other kind of fields, for instance, CB radio, that, we have a large forge. And if we advise not to buy a certain piece of equipment, they don't sell anything. And I think that that will certainly for in the future also be for shortwave radio.
Is it, from a commercial point of view, worth continuing with a sort of magazine directed towards shortwave?
Oh, yes, but not absolutely for shortwave, because to my opinion, and as far as I know, there are about 50,000 shortwave listeners, regular shortwave listeners here in Holland, which is not sufficient to make just a magazine on shortwave listening. So what we did is combine it, because I think that shortwave listeners don't have only hobby as shortwave listening, but also, for instance, for computers or hi-fi or CB radio and so on. So we're writing about everything in consumer electronics.
Willem Bos. And that figure of 50,000 regular shortwave listeners in Holland is an interesting estimate. The Netherlands has a population of 14 million. If you do the sums using the same ratio, the USA should have a regular shortwave audience of around 700,000. And in fact, this agrees with other estimates, or perhaps guesstimates is a better word, published by some international broadcasters. But finding out exactly how many and what sort of people listen to the crackling bands remains a mystery. Talking of the USA, here's our reporter Dennis Powell in New York with more about clandestine radio in Afghanistan. We mentioned this topic 2 weeks ago, but some more numbers have now come to light.
Приехали в Афганистан.
That's an interview with a Soviet soldier who surrendered to rebel forces in Afghanistan. If you had heard it on your FM radio, you would have been listening to Radio Free Kabul. The anti-government radio service makes use of 5-watt portable transmitters, each of which broadcasts a pre-recorded tape. Ludmilla Thorne of Freedom House in New York City explains how Radio Free Kabul works.
We now have 7 transmitters. Well, 6th and the 7th will be there by end of March. Our hope is to cover Afghanistan with 36 transmitters and consequently cover the entire country and speak to where Russians can speak to Soviet soldiers and the Afghans can speak to Afghans in their own language.
The project will, when completed, have cost between $200,000 and $300,000. The Soviet dissident Vladimir Bukovsky has traveled Europe raising money for the project, and he's now in the U.S. on the same mission.
Altogether, we raised something like $60,000 already. So that the response was not too bad in Europe, and I hope in America it would be as well as good as it was in Europe.
Also, the radio is totally sponsored privately. It's based on private donations.
It would seem as though relatively few people would be reached by FM, since standard medium wave receivers are normally more readily available, both to the Afghan people and to Soviet troops. But Bukowski says Radio Free Kabul is having no difficulty being heard.
Most of the Afghans would have small transistors, which operate, which could receive the broadcasting on FM frequency. And in the Soviet Army, especially those soldiers who served probably half a year, would have in their own private possession the transistors like that. Apart from that, we sometimes use the frequency of communications between between armored cars, tanks, helicopters, or their own frequency of broadcasts, of army broadcasts from Central Asia to Afghanistan.
Using the Soviets' own frequencies for Russian language and Ukrainian broadcasts is a sure way to gain listeners. But since the transmitters aren't very powerful, and since they're on FM, they must be placed close to locations where Soviet troops are concentrated. The Afghan Mujahideen are at home in the mountainous terrain, so they're able to place the transmitters in very good locations.
One of the transmitters is 25 kilometers outside of Kabul, specifically working on Kabul. It broadcasts on both local language and Russian. One is just outside a big Soviet military base in Afghanistan called Bagram.
One problem in the initial stages of putting Radio Free Kabul on the air was the lack of technical knowledge among the Afghan freedom fighters, but that problem's been solved.
There is a very good team of French technicians going with these transmitters each time to teach Afghanis how to operate it and to install the things.
The transmitters, manufactured in Italy, contain timers which automatically turn on the transmitters, and after they have warmed up for a few seconds, the timers turn on the cassette tapes, which contain the program material. With the transmitters so close at hand, the Soviets have tried to close them down.
There were several instances when the Soviets tried to bomb it or destroy it from the helicopters, but they didn't try to retrieve it because, you know, the terrain is rather rugged, difficult for putting people down, and they're afraid of ambushes. So they would rather try to destroy it by bombing. But so far they've never been successful in doing so.
Programs for the Afghan people are recorded in two native languages and are produced in Pakistan. Bukovsky was asked where the Russian and Ukrainian tapes are made.
In Paris, because the whole thing was originated in Paris. We have a committee working on that in Paris. And the Russian language programs, or languages of the Soviet Union, would be done all over, sent to Paris, and sort of dubbed up in Paris studio.
The broadcasts in Persian and Pashto begin with a sign-on saying, "This is the voice of the Afghan Mujahideen," with a background of Afghan traditional music. The programs are on a variety of religious and secular topics, from Quran readings to reports of rebel victories against the Soviet troops. There's no fixed schedule, but the local language broadcasts generally begin at about 15:30 GMT and last about 1/2 hour. The Soviet broadcasts carry a sign-on of a different sort.
The theme music now for the Russian language, 15-minute broadcast at Radio Free Kabul, broadcast every day, or Ukrainian or Belarusian. That section of our program is always opened by a certain theme music. It's written by a very well-known Russian poet and writer called Bulat Okudzhava. And this particular song that we use as a theme music to open up a program is called "The Boots Are Rumbling."
That particular song was written to describe the killing and destruction that came when Nazi soldiers invaded Russia a generation ago. Those who work with Radio Free Kabul believe that Soviet soldiers will make the connection and come to think that their boots are rumbling also in Afghanistan.
Dennis Powell. For a large part of 1981, a ship anchored in the Mediterranean captured large television audiences in Israel. It wasn't A.B. Nathan's peace ship, but a tanker by the name of Odelia, actually named after the 1.5-year-old daughter of owner Paul Greenwald. He and two other business partners, one in Greece, the other in Monte Carlo, made a lot of money showing newly released films in both English and Hebrew. The ship has now left the airwaves due to a legal problem, which may well have international repercussions. Our reporter, Cas van Iersel, visited Mr. Greenwald at his home in Tel Aviv quite recently, while the ship was still on the air, and asked the businessman whether the station was proving popular.
Very popular station, yeah. More than 450,000 people are already looking at it.
So you sell a lot of advertising time?
No, not yet, but we should sell a lot of advertising. I intend to receive more than 50% of the Israeli market in advertising.
You aim for 50% of the Israeli market in advertising? Because people cannot advertise on the national channel, right?
Exactly, that's the reason, yeah.
How much do you charge for advertisements?
Well, right now, for a spot of 30 seconds, we charge $125. But, of course, the price will increase with the audition.
Now, this is not going without problems. Of course, the Israeli government hates to see this happening. They've been planning a second TV channel for a long, long time. Are they doing anything against you?
Well, they're planning the second channel, the second Israeli channel, for more than 10 years, and weeks ago, they declared that they don't plan it anymore. They canceled the whole idea of having a second channel in Israel.
But aren't they doing anything against you?
Oh, they do. They try to do a lot against, and, well, sometimes they, let's say, interfere in our business, but they can't really stop it.
But the Knesset passed a new law outlawing TV broadcasts from a ship.
Well, apparently the law is against us, but in fact the law will give us the license. What in fact it's written that an Israeli citizen can't broadcast from a ship, and it makes no difference if the ship is in international waters or in national waters, as long as he has not a license from the government. Now all we have to do, and that's exactly what we intend to do in the next days, is to go to the High Court, to appeal to the High Court, and the High Court will ask the Ministry of Telecommunication to come there and explain how on earth he can give a license in international waters. Because, as everyone knows, the Israeli Minister of Telecommunication can give a license in Israel, but not in a territory which is not belonging to him. Well, for me, it's a pure business, and that's it.
What are your plans for the future?
Well, first of all, to stabilize the station in Israel, And in parallel, I intend to open 5 stations in other countries, in England, Belgium, Denmark, Germany, and New Zealand.
Where are the ships now, if you have them?
The ships are now in Greece, in Piraeus. And, well, they're waiting for the order to go out to broadcast.
The other 5 Adelia ships, will they broadcast radio also?
Well, we don't plan for now to broadcast radio from these ships when they will start to broadcast television. But if we should have the possibility, that's not a problem to have a radio station. If you already have a ship with a TV station, there is no problem to have to add a radio station.
Confident talk. Then, so why has the ship gone off the air? We contacted Mr. Greenwald yesterday afternoon in Tel Aviv. Is it the new Israeli law?
Oh, yes, that's exactly what they protest now, because they have no right to make a law for the high seas. But they did it, against the international law.
And do you plan to appeal?
I can't appeal in Israel, because it's a law of the parliament, and there is no legal way to appeal. So my only way to fight it is to demonstrate.
And how do you plan to do that?
Well, I intend to make a hunger strike in front of the Ministry of Telecommunication House in next days.
When exactly?
I suppose in 5th of April.
Now, there have been reports in the press that a group representing an Iranian ex-president have approached you to buy the Odelia. Have you turned them down?
I never heard about something like that.
Now, you've also talked about other ships elsewhere broadcasting off the coast of Belgium and England. Are they going to go ahead?
Well, first I have to finish my job in Israel. Later on, I shall do it in other countries.
And what about the crew? Have they been told to go or what?
No, they are on the ship.
And whereabouts is the ship exactly?
It's in Limassol now, in the south of Cyprus.
Okay. One thing that wasn't clear, too, how big is the ship, the Odelia?
Odelia is 1,200 tons.
And where are the other ships that you were planning? Are they still available?
Yes, of course. They're in Greece now.
And are they ready to go?
Well, they are prepared to go, but I don't want to send them now because the situation is not clear.
What are you worried about?
Well, about new legislation. If Israel can do such a law, every country can do such a law. Although I don't believe that all the countries will be anti-democratic with such laws.
Meanwhile, in Holland, the Dutch domestic media has brought up Radio Caroline again. The radio ship, formerly in the North Sea, has been promising to return ever since the last vessel sank, and rumours have turned out to be empty promises. The latest promise, though, is a return over Easter, but this time the story is being backed up with a foretaste of the new jingles.
Radio Caroline, it's Caroline. Woo-hoo! It's great to be back, the imagination station, Caroline.
No medium wave frequencies or exact dates, of course, which means it could be another hoax, but it's the first time they've come up with new jingles for the ship Imagine. From speculation to more reliable news, as we cross to Arthur Cushion in Invercargill for the Pacific Media News.
The latest medium wave station in Australia is 4HI, Emerald Queensland, 1143 kHz, 5 kilowatt, operating 1900 to 1405 UTC daily, with soon to extend to 24 hours a day. This makes 134 commercial radio stations in Australia, and of these, 67 are operating all night. The Australian pirate radio, CBN, broadcasts its next test on April the 18th. The transmission is on 7400 kHz, and the time is 1000 UTC. The next one after that is scheduled for May 15 on 7435 at 2100 UTC. New Caledonia, they have dropped the frequency of 1260 kHz medium wave and replaced it with an FM outlet. New Caledonia from Namur on 666 medium wave, 3355, 7170 and 11710 kHz, all heard opening at 1900 UTC. Samoa, American Samoa on 585 Pacific Beacon, a new gospel radio station, 50 kilowatt, is scheduled to operate on this frequency. On 1120 kHz, WVUV and Pango Pango is to make a frequency change to 648 kHz. The transmission is 10 kilowatt, 24 hours a day, and here's a typical WVUV ID.
This is the bright spot on your radio dial, Radio Samoa, 1120 Burma, your music and news center for the South Pacific, 24 hours a day.
That was WVUV, now on 1120, shortly to change frequency to 648 kilohertz. And still in Samoa, Western Samoa, Apia, is to move to 747 kilohertz from 1404. Radio New Zealand technicians have recently installed new transmitters in Western Samoa, and they are operating on 540, on 1251, and on 1359 kilohertz. And Vanuatu, 1125 kilohertz medium wave, now operating with 10 kilowatt. Shortwave frequency 3945 gives the best reception with English at 0815 UTC. And thanks to the DX Post in Adelaide and New Zealand DX Times for some of that information. Guam, KTWR, three transmissions in English now, 0745 to 0930 on 11840, from 1430 to 1600 on 11945, and from 1445 to 1500 on 11920. That transmission only through Sunday to Wednesday. Japan, Radio Japan is reorganising all its external service transmissions and also cancelling Tokyo Calling, a popular programme on Sundays of DX information, but it's to be replaced by a new programme, Radio Japan DX's Corner. This will be broadcast in a 10-minute segment on the Saturday transmission to Australia and New Zealand between 10.25 and 10.35. The new time of the transmission from Tokyo is 1000 to 1100 UTC on 11.875 15.235 kHz. The Austrian radio is using some new frequencies, and the one of most interest to us here in the South Pacific is a transmission 0700 to 0900 using the new frequency of 15165, English broadcast at 0830. Canada, Radio Canada International continues to be well received on its transmissions, but another lower powered Canadian is CFRX Toronto 6070 kHz using 1 kilowatt. This station relays medium wave station CFRB, but 24 minutes past the hour inserts its own identification. And here is that identification announcement.
You are tuned to CFRX Toronto, Canada, broadcasting in the 49-meter band on an assigned frequency of 6,070 kilohertz. CFRX broadcasts the regular program schedule of CFRB Toronto.
That's the CFRX announcement at 24 minutes past the hour on 6070 kHz, that recording at 0824 UTC. And finally, Guatemala, Radio National in Guatemala, 9760. Transmission heard with classical music around 0415, but at 0445, blocked by the BBC.
Thanks, Arthur. And actually, we've dropped the final item we prepared yesterday because of some late news that's just in. It appears that a fourth clandestine has popped up in the 40-metre band to join the others running in Central America. Thanks to a tip-off, we managed to record this off-air identification at 0104 UTC earlier today.
La voz de la resistencia omica. Transmitimos en la onda corta con una potencia de 10.000 vatios. Escuchen en primer lugar nuestro boletín de noticias presentado por Broma Países Bajos.
The frequency seems to vary, but Richard Miller in Florida phoned our answering line to say that he can hear a Spanish program running for an hour starting at 01 hours on 7300 kilohertz. Well, we've just put a call through to our clandestine expert, John Campbell. So, John, where do you think the signals are coming from?
Oh, I think that's rather a difficult question at this stage because it's too early for any collection of information to have formed. I think, though, that the odds are that it isn't really one of the more obvious things that attach to an organisation that's trying to liberate a piece of territory. Otherwise, the answer would be easy. But there are other organisations in that part of the world that, I would say, are more in the business of liberating pieces of people's minds than territories. For example, one possibility that comes to mind is the FCEM, that's the Frente Corsario Enrique Morgan, which, as students of Central American history might appreciate,
while programming from the new station consists mainly of farming and family planning advice, which may indicate it's directed to agricultural areas or perhaps the coffee belt. This may be a cover for more subversive action, though. At 1 minute past 4 hours UTC this morning, they started reading a series of numbers.
Atención oyentes a la noticia siguiente. Tres, uno, tres, cinco, uno, ocho, siete, cero, cero.
Well, if anyone can work out the significance of that string of numbers, or has some ideas as to its purpose, drop us a line to Media Network. In the meantime, I'm off to catch up on some sleep, so on behalf of the rest of the team, this is Jonathan Mark saying, back soon, bye for now.
Some stations talk to the world. Radio Netherlands talks to people.
And that's where we end this nostalgic trip back into the Media Network audio archives from 1981 to October 2000. If you find all this stuff interesting, you might want to explore the Critical Distance website.
This is Media Network with Jonathan Marks,
where you can find more vintage audio shows, but also peruse recent video interviews I've made in the course of my travels around the world. Some of the videos actually follow up on points raised in the Media Network programme. So zip over to www.jonathanmarks.com for more details. In the meantime, this is Jonathan Marks saying back soon. Bye for now.
I regret to inform you this recording is now officially over.